When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, a Mason Avenue's Mile Long Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Ken Levin and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good.
Yep, doing good. So promote, extend, trade, and honestly, I was stumped by this one. But the only relevant and interesting fact that I came up with here is that in 1927, the Cyclone opened up. And obviously it's Brooklyn related and Cyclone, obviously Cyclone related, but I couldn't think of anything promote extend trade to use with that. So I don't know. Any horrible Cyclone stories with you guys?
Oh, I hate roller coasters.
Same.
I don't know if I've ever ridden it.
Really? Okay.
It's just like, I don't know. Like I'm not the daredevil type. So
yeah.
Yeah, I like roller coasters, but I was more of a Six Flags person.
You Jersey son of a bitch, you. I've been on a roller coaster exactly once, and unfortunately it was the Cyclone. And that was not, you know, basically...
How was it? How scary was it?
Oh, it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. I was trying to impress a girl, and... I mean, I guess I succeeded, but just never going to do
that. But at what cost?
Exactly. Exactly. All right, well, let's jump into our draft coverage here, because this week, Baseball America, they had a mock draft the other day. And it wasn't just, you know, rankings. They had a bunch of their staff draft, not just the first round, but the first two rounds, the first 66 picks overall, something like that. It, you know, it's a fun experiment, but it's not really something to take too seriously, because, you know, Baseball America, their staff, yeah, they're plugged in to a degree and they do have insider information, but, you know, at the end of the day, they don't have direct phone lines to, you know, amateur scouting departments and VPs of all the individual teams and everything that they represented. So they don't really know what all the teams are thinking, so this isn't really meant to be taken as gospel or anything like that. You know, it's just a fun experiment.
I also feel like baseball is a little different than other sports, where like there's more factors. There's the slot money and all that stuff that's stuff kind of happens behind the scenes more in baseball than like football, you kind of, or basketball or hockey, you kind of know who's going early. There's surprises and stuff, but not really. It's a little different.
Oh, yes. As long as you have Kansas City or Baltimore involved, there's always going to be some sort of stupidity going on.
Yeah, like you could really do it. Stuff can really go sideways in baseball, where in other sports, like even if it goes sideways, everyone kind of knows when and everyone kind of gets an idea of when it's going a different direction.
Yeah, I mean, that's something like we've talked about on the show lots of different times. Like after the first, maybe, what do we usually say? Like the top tier is like the first maybe four guys. Then you have like that second tier that's like 5 to 15 or whatever.
Yeah, and you can't really like float someone in basketball if you're the Lakers or something, you know, like, or if you're picking at the back end of the draft, like. That's just not a thing where in baseball it is. So I think that adds to the intrigue of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, a guy that might be seen as 13 could go 23, and a guy that could be seen as 30 might go 60. And
I mean, look at Kumar Rocker last year. I know they didn't sign him, but.
Right. There's so much going on that we don't even know about.
Yeah. We'll know after.
Yeah, exactly. If ever, with certain True. Things. But yeah, so, you know, it's important to keep in mind that this is not like the gospel truth or anything like that. But it's still fun to analyze, and that's what we're here to do, to have fun. So with the first pick, Ben Badler was picking for the Mets, and he selected Cole Young, a shortstop from North Allegheny High School in Wexford, Pennsylvania, which is over by Pittsburgh. And his rationale was, quote, "The Mets are bat-driven, and there are few players more hitterish than Young. He has a chance to stick at shortstop with a potential plus bat, good strike zone awareness, and power that should play up because of how frequently he finds the barrel," end quote. Now, with the second pick, Jeff Ponce was picking, and he selected Gabriel Hughes, right-handed pitcher from Gonzaga. And his rationale was, quote, "Led by a mid-90s fastball and mid-80s slider, uses the ace of the zag staff. His physicality, loud stuff, and projectability make him one of the survivors of the college pitching class, maintaining health and production throughout the spring." All right, so before we analyze these two guys, if that's how it goes down, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the Mets' first round? Cole Young and then Gabriel Hughes.
I mean, did anyone, like, fall past the Mets? That,
yeah. Quite a few. Quite a few guys. A lot of guys fell that we liked, unfortunately.
No. Well, then I'd probably be upset.
Yep. Okay, good. I finally got it open. So, Dylan Lesko, arguably, you know, with the Tommy John and everything like that.
Yeah, it's a weird
He was selected 12th with the Tigers. Brock Porter was selected 17 with the Phillies in their draft. Kumar Rocker was 20. Chase DeLauder, 21. Brandon Barriera, 25 with the Yankees.
Man, I'd rather all those dudes.
Yeah.
That's how it fell, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Porter especially.
Yes. It would be pretty funny if the Mets draft Porter after the Lindor stuff. What was he even there for? I don't remember.
Covert negotiations. it was the he was presenting him with the Gatorade High School Player of the Year Award.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha.
Because okay. Lindor was a winner.
No, yeah, it makes sense. I just wasn't sure why.
And he also likes Gatorade, of course.
He probably signed by them, to be honest with you, Lindor.
Probably. So, why do we find Cole Young so eh? Because Lucas mentioned this in our chat, that he feels like a Cheech pick.
Yeah, it might not be, but it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, there's two ways to look at it. You can look at it and say, oh, yeah, Cheech. Basically, his scouting powers, he's a good hitter with not a lot of over-the-wall power, and the range and arm is good enough to stay at shortstop. Like in the three or four scouting reports that I was looking at from different places, these are some of the keywords. Quote, steady. Quote, solid if unspectacular. Quote, does everything well but nothing great. You know, not exactly ringing endorsements here. But
that's like, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, but these are also some of the same words that were used to describe Anthony Volpe a couple of years ago. And he is one of the best prospects in all of baseball now, you know, so.
Sure. It's just, to me, it feels like it's, so my rationale with this draft and how I would approach it if I was the Mets is, logically, you're not going to be picking this early for a long time if you're the Mets because of the new payroll that they now have access to and obviously will use. Like, we don't have to worry about the Mets penny pinching anymore. They gave a lot of money out. They're going to go well past the $300 million tax threshold stuff and this year and next year or whatever. So this might be your two highest picks in a very long time. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know why you're going to go high floor, low ceiling if that's how it comes down. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
Like, I would rather swing for the fences a little bit, and I get that the system's really thin and you need, like, stability, but also if you're picking 30 or 28 every year and you don't have the structure for that yet, it's going to be really difficult to get, like, you're going to end up taking a lot of high floor, low ceiling guys there anyway. So you might as well swing for the fences a little bit now when you have top 15 picks, because you can't get them. It's not like other sports where you could trade up into the first round. Like, that's just not a thing. Like, you draft where you draft. So that's the only reason why I don't really like those style of picks, that if they would do that, or like a Daniel Suzak, if they take him, which is a highly mocked guy to them, like, that would just feel like kind of wasting one of your very rare high round draft pick bullets.
Yep. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Generally speaking, I don't really like the idea of a high floor high school player.
Yeah, like, because he's in high school.
Yeah. Generally speaking, I think that's a bad idea. Like, if he's a high school player, inherently there's risk that, you know, the floor that you think is there isn't actually there. Bet on the toolbox.
Yep, and his one carrying tool right now is his hit tool, and that, you know, is notoriously
the hardest thing to tell if it's real.
Yeah, so
because, like, all these kids in high school are way better than their competition if they're going D1 or in the first round or what have you. So, like, are they professional baseball good, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, well, it's a consensus that Young is a very pick.
There's a way that the draft falls where he's not, because everyone exciting gets taken really quick, and, you know, but, or yeah, you take 14 instead of 11, and
that is a little different. That is true. At the same time, though, I feel like there are, let's say, worst case scenario, every single player that we like somehow gets taken before the Mets pick.
Agree. I already know what you are.
Yeah, there's still more intriguing guys, I feel, anyway.
Yes. I'd rather reach for a risk, honestly.
Yeah. I remember a couple of years ago, I mean, I guess at this point it was like 10 years ago. I think it was the 2012 draft when Giolito got selected.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very, like, against that, because at the time it's like, well, the Mets' financial situation is so shitty and we don't know, you know, what's going to be, and maybe taking the risk on a guy like Giolito, who could end up being a complete bust and never actually, you know, progressing in any meaningful way, coming back from Tommy John, is not the best idea. Now it's the complete opposite, where the team is flush with money. Hell, shoot for the stars.
Yeah, and, like, I don't know, I've seen enough high floor, low ceiling guys in the Mets that the Mets draft, and they just never take that next step. And they don't have really good player development yet, because everyone's still, like, Epler hasn't hired his guys, and it's still early for Cohen to really make his impact, so.
Pretty much. All right, now how about Gabriel Hughes with the second pick, the 14th overall. He, like I said, he's from Gonzaga. He posted a 3.21 ERA in 98 innings this year, allowed 76 hits, walked 37, and struck out 138. And then for his career there, he has a cumulative 3.05 ERA with a 3.4 walks per nine and an 11.5 strikeouts per nine. 6'4", he's good size, you know, should be able to log innings. Has a mid-90s fastball. He could ramp it up to almost triple digits. And then he complements it with a high 80s slider and a decent changeup. Command of all three has kind of been a little iffy over the course of his career, but he has shown improvement in that regard. And he did knock off an entire walk per inning this year as compared to last year. So honestly, it's like, I don't know. I have no problems with Hughes in and of himself, but he just sounds a little boring. He's kind of like an improved Justin Dunn.
Both of these feel like picks you take at 25.
Yeah.
Not 11 and 14. I think that's where my main gripe would be in that scenario.
Pretty much. They're just okay players, but, you know.
Yeah.
They don't stand out.
It feels like late first round stuff that you're taking in the front half of the first round, and I feel like that's not what the Mets need to be doing right now.
Nope. All right, well, a little more intriguing was the second round pick, I should say. With this second round pick, the 52nd pick overall, Josh Norris was selecting for the Mets, and he went with Ben Joyce, a right-handed pitcher from Tennessee. And his rationale was, it was good rationale, really. Quote, the hardest throwing amateur pitcher of all time. Sounds like a good starting point to me.
Have you seen him play, though?
I have not.
That fastball is straight as an arrow.
Yeah, that's it. He does throw from a kind of weird, like, he drops and drives, and his, like, arm angle's almost sidearm, so it's, like, very, it is a little, yeah.
Like, I don't want to call it, like, a bad fastball, because it's definitely not when it's that hard, but there's just no deceptiveness to it outside of being fast, you know? Mm-hmm. And, of course, like, he's throwing, like, 103 or some shit like that. Like, it's yeah. It's going to get some batters out no matter what, even at the major league level, but you need to do other stuff, too. Like, you can't just rely on throwing even that hard. Like, Michael Ohtani is the same way. He throws 102, and I don't think he's a particularly good prospect, because it's straight and it's going to get lit up at the higher levels, you know, because there's no
and
other
he has stuff. No idea where it's going.
Exactly. Like he gets hyped up a lot because he's a highlight reel scout when you watch him strike out the side and throw 102 eight times. But when you get to face Ronald Acuna, he doesn't care that it's that hard. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So like you need to do other stuff, too, even if you throw really hard. And the stuff isn't there for him, and I feel like with Joyce, like, it's exciting and it's fun, but also I could see him having some pitfalls for that reason. And also he's probably a reliever, so.
Yeah, in total, he has thrown 32.1 innings this year. He's a reliever. He had one start. 2.23 ERA, you know, it's misleading, again, because he's a reliever. 18 hits allowed, 14 walks, 53 strikeouts. But you pay to see, you know, 105 on the radar gun, and he's capable of doing that, which is.
Oh, I'm not saying I wouldn't draft him.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it sounds like I'm disparaging the pick. I would be fine with it, even happy with it. But if I was the Mets and I would do that, I would absolutely just throw him right in the bullpen and tell him to get as ready as possible for the big leagues.
Yeah, we want you throwing three innings in, like, you know, important games down the stretch.
Yeah, like, just throw him in, just try to get him on the fast track to the majors as quick as
David
possible.
David Price him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And, like, that's... if he can start, you figure that out later. But just, honestly, try to just play that stuff up for an inning or two at a time.
Mm-hmm. And depending on other players that the Mets select with the first the two first-round picks and then, you know, rounds three, four, whatever, it could be an interesting money-saving pick there, because he literally has like 50 innings to his entire career.
Yeah.
He didn't pitch in 2019, which is his freshman year, because of injuries. He missed most of 2020 because of Corona, obviously. And then he missed all of 2021 because of Tommy John. So
it's pretty incredible he's doing that like a year out of Tommy John.
Yeah, no.
You know?
Makes you wonder. If he could hit 105 after Tommy John, like, what the hell was he doing before? But, you know, this isn't a guy that is going to – you're not going to need to go over slot with him. You know, the slot value for that selection is $1.4 million. Even if they sign him for $1 million, and I think that might be even a little much, you know, that's almost $500,000 right there that could be allocated to whatever else that they're doing.
So yeah, that's a good point, especially with, like, if they get really spicy in the early rounds, mm-hmm. in the first round, I mean, because this is the second round, so this is the early rounds, but, like, if they really want to go nuts and try to get some really high-end talent and float some guys or whatever, then you could kind of have a fun way to senior sign people and not totally punt the rest of the draft.
Yep. And this is a guy that is, it's like, you know, a useful selection in terms of, you know, he could throw 105. He's going to strike guys out. He's going to move fast. He will have utility as a pitcher, but also you can then, you know, a strategic pick as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I wouldn't be angry if he was selected, but it's, I don't know.
I feel like a pick like that, like picking him has a few more pitfalls than you would think, but also it's fun.
Yeah. I feel like
I would love to. I know he wouldn't probably go to Brooklyn for long, but if he goes to Brooklyn and is throwing 103, I'd be like, oh, wow, yeah. Like, you know?
That's a pick that I feel like you could only really grade in the context of the rest of the draft.
I agree with that.
If the Mets pick, you know, Hughes and Young with their first round picks, and then pick, you know, and Joyce with the second round pick, it's like, well, now it's a little. But if they have two, you know, balls off the wall picks with their 11 and 14 and then pick him, it's like, OK, well, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So. And then obviously everything that comes after the next bunch of rounds, but yeah, so it was two more guys to add to the list of possibilities that we've seen other outlets come up with the Mets picks.
Man, I really want it to be draft time.
Yeah, well, we got a couple of, what is it, like 3 weeks at this point?
Something like that.
Yeah. Can't wait for, yeah, taking a day or two off to just freaking sit in front of the computer and just down coffee and write and write and write and write. No sleep.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode is made possible by PwC. A robot may not be coming for your job, but competitors are coming for your market share. At PwC, we pair the right tech with the right solutions to help you gain a competitive edge. Reimagine operations from the cloud, fuel innovation with responsible AI, and detect risks before they become headlines. That's human-led and tech-powered. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at thenewequation.com.
All right, so let's shift our attention now to the actual Mets. And we're recording on a Saturday, so the week isn't over. So we're going to be missing a couple of games here. But Syracuse, they are playing the Rochester Red Wings right now. They are 2-2 against them, which puts them 27-42 on the year, which leaves them in second to last place in the International League East Division, 13 games behind Buffalo. Really, the only players of note, Mark Vientos, he's cooled off a little bit as compared to his May, but he's still having a pretty strong June. In 12 games, he's hitting 265, 379, 510 with four homers, eight walks, and 18 strikeouts. And since May 1st, when he, you know, when the calendar turned May, he's hitting 302, 396, 586 with 10 homers, 16 walks, and 43 strikeouts. So that'll play. Another guy that got off to a rough start of the season, but he's really turned it on, not just this week, but all of June, is Travis Blankenhorn. And basically 20 games in June, he's hitting 395, 459, 645 with four homers, four steals, eight walks, and 16 strikeouts.
But, I mean, good for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's like these two guys are just, I don't want to say they're blocked, but, you know, these are not positions that the Mets need necessarily. They have, you know, guys on the major league roster right now that can take over if the everyday players are just kind of going through slumps or hurt or whatever else. So, you know, the drums are not banging for either Vientos or Blankenhorn right now.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see Vientos in like a DH role at some point.
Yeah, I think they're both 100% going to get playing time this year.
At some point. Like, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Vientos is kind of soon. Like, Blankenhorn is like kind of in the middle of being a prospect, and not, he's a quad A player, really.
Yeah.
And like, I guess you could put him on the major league roster over Dom, but you got to clear a 40 spot for him, and who are you going to do that with? But with Vientos, like, if Dom can't hit and JD gets hurt or something, I wouldn't be surprised if he's up because of a JD Davis injury or just general JD Davis bad play. Like, he's league average hitter, but you could improve on that. And if you think Vientos is an improvement on that, you could find a space for him easier.
Yeah, he's him being on the 40 man. Vientos is, it makes his life a lot easier.
And I was talking about this with someone, but they really need to figure out what they need at the deadline. Like, and a good way to do that is these prospects, you know, like, mm-hmm. If you call up a Vientos or a Beatty or Alvarez, if you want to go crazy, and you figure out what you need at the deadline, because you need they're very good, but they still need pieces. So you have a few weeks to figure that out. And Vientos is going to do that in AAA.
Very true. All right. Next up, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. They are 2-2 against the Reading Fightin' Phils, and that puts them at 26-41 on the year, which is 17 games behind the Hartford Yard Goats, who are now in first place in the International League Northeast Division. So, who do you want to talk about first? Because we have Alvarez, we have Beatty, we have Mauricio.
Put Alvarez in Syracuse.
I don't even want to see him in Syracuse. I feel like it's just further away. It's easier to go see games that involve Binghamton than it does Syracuse. But
fine, put him in Queens.
Well, okay.
No, he's got to make one trip to Worcester first.
No, but for real, like, I've kind of been talked into it, to the calling up Alvarez to see if he sticks, and if not, just send him to AAA after, because he's destroying AA right now, like, just hitting home runs almost every day.
He should be at AAA, I think.
At the very least, yes.
Well, he had a 21-game on-base streak, and it ended. So, trade. In this current Reading series, he is 5-17 with two homers and six walks, seven technically if you want to include an intentional walk, and just two strikeouts. Anyone want to guess what his numbers for June are?
His slugging is probably insane.
All right, so his batting average, 296. On base, 407. Slugging, 718.
Yeah.
Doubles, 9 home runs, and 13 walks to 18 strikeouts. But you want to know the craziest thing about that line, I think?
Go ahead.
He's hitting 296, and he has a 283 BABIP.
Getting so unlucky.
Yeah, he is getting unlucky.
I mean, he's done with Double A. Like,
oh yeah.
Like in the beginning of the year, the pitchers adjusted to him, like every scouting report is going to do, and he adjusted to that, and here we are. He's hitting 300 in June.
Yep. All right, Brett Beatty. He also has a pretty big streak. He has a 15-game hitting streak, as opposed to Alvarez's on-base streak. And in this Reading series, Beatty is hitting 429, 556, 643 with a homer, three walks, and five strikeouts. And in June as a whole, he is hitting 343, 422, 521 with a double, four home runs, and eight walks to 19 strikeouts. And considering that in April and May combined, he had three home runs. And then now in June, he already has four, and we still have like maybe four or five more games to go in June. You know, whatever it was that put him on the DL at the end of May, I guess it was, if it was a legit physical thing, that's cleared itself up. Or if it was a mental thing, he got himself straight or whatever it is. Because you can't really argue with the numbers that he's putting up. Ronnie Mauricio. Poor Ronnie Mauricio. He's 1 for 17 in this Reading series. He won the silver lining, though?
I guess.
That one hit that he has is a home run, so...
Yeah. He does do that.
He does do that. One hit, which was a home run, no walks, nine strikeouts in the series. So in June as a whole, he's hitting 225, 276, 500. Four doubles, six homers, four steals, six walks, and 21 strikeouts.
Please be elsewhere after the All-Star break, after the trade deadline, I mean.
I don't know. It's very disheartening to see. Why can't he be Javi Baez?
Right, but I mean, that's... How many hobbies are there in the world even?
I know.
And he's been bad this year, so because it falls apart real quick.
Yep. Speaking of falling apart, someone that I kind of figured would but hasn't, Brandon McIlwain. He was promoted to Binghamton after really standing out in Brooklyn as being like their only good player, and he's actually kept it going. Small sample size, of course, only six games, but he's 9 for 24 with the Rumble Ponies with three doubles, a homer, and two walks to seven strikeouts. Pretty incredible, given that, like, he had no real experience. Not, I don't want to say no real experience, but he had very little baseball experience after...
A college football player.
Yeah, he was a college football player with a little bit of baseball sprinkled in, and the Mets signed him. He wanted to play baseball, and just blown away here.
Yeah, I mean, he's been good. I don't know how real it is or anything, but it's fun. So, also, pop-up prospects like that help system no matter what.
Yep. The other guy really of any note in Binghamton, Jose Budo, started the season out pretty strong. I don't want to say he's crashed back to earth, but he has regressed a bit. Reading tagged him for five runs over two innings the other day. And on the season now, he has a 4.09 ERA in 55 innings with 52 hits allowed, 22 walks, and 69 strikeouts. We've said that he has a super thin margin of error because he's basically, you know, two-pitch player, fastball changeup guy. And, you know, the chinks in the armor there have become more visible, more apparent. He can't go through, can't go through up a lineup really more than twice. So he's limited to like five or six innings. And, you know, two runs in five innings is a 3.60 ERA. Not bad, but not great either. Three runs over six innings, that's a 4.50 ERA. It's a little bit worse, you know. And that's just one or two mistakes per ball game to have, you know, two or three runs. So just, you know, probably not going to work as a starter long term.
Probably not. I'd also, it's so weird. How many changeup first relievers are there? You know, like Trevor Hoffman.
Mm.
But I can't really think of anyone else.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Are we Eric Gagne posting for Jose Budo? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, it's weird. At least he throws harder than he did a couple of years ago. I mean, now he's consistently, you know, in the mid to low 90s as opposed to being the high 80s to low 90s. That'll definitely help. But
oh yeah, for sure.
It's it is a weird profile.
It's a weird profile, but I wouldn't mind seeing it in the pen just to see, because I don't think there's much of a starter ceiling.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, that's really the only viable. I'm assuming it's really the only viable path forward for him to become a major leaguer and have any kind of impact. All right, Brooklyn Cyclones now. They've taken 4 or 5 from the Jersey Shore Blue Claws, and believe it or not, they're in first place.
Huh.
I'm not bullshitting. As of 9:30, as we record right now, the Brooklyn Cyclones are in first place because the second half of the South Atlantic League started, and they are perfect 2-0. They are undefeated. They are alone atop the leadership in the division. And they're 32-36 on the year overall. So here's hoping they finally get to and then past 500.
I would say, though, I think the second half for Brooklyn's going to be better than the first with the draft upcoming, and that pushing St. Lucie guys up to Brooklyn and probably even getting some Brooklyn guys to Brooklyn from the draft itself.
Yeah, there's going to be, you know, a lot of movement in the next couple of weeks.
But Brooklyn's just so boring.
Yeah, the offense. I mean, obviously it's just, this is how it's been for like 20 years basically now. The offense in Brooklyn gets suppressed because...
I mean, yeah. Because have you guys been to that stadium?
Yeah.
Yep.
Ken, have you been?
Yeah, many times.
It's a nightmare, bro. Like, it's a very pretty stadium, don't get me wrong. But, like, looking at it, it looks cavernous and, like, it's right on the beach. So it's literally connected to the boardwalk at Coney Island. So it's windy and it's just like on those windy, cold nights, the ball just does not go anywhere. Like you'll see dudes really crank one and it's like a fly out to not even the track. And it's like, damn.
Yep. Basically, two players on the team have slugging percentages over 400. Tanner Murphy, he has a 452 slugging, and Rowdy Jordan has a 403 slugging. Everyone else is below 400. Not optimal. JT Schwartz, he's leading the team with a 266 batting average.
Is that good?
Rowdy Jordan has a 366 on base percentage. That's okay. That's pretty good. But yeah, at least the pitching has improved. I mean, early in this season, the pitching situation in Brooklyn is pretty bad, which is surprising for Brooklyn. But, you know, most of their starters in June have been pretty good. Nick Zwack, he's been basically lights out in June. He's a 0.47 ERA. Junior Santos was struggling a lot, but he's kind of calmed down a little bit. He has a 2.91 ERA in June. Garrison Bryant, he has a 3.45 ERA. Mike Vasil has a 3.48 ERA. Basically, the only, like, guy that's getting regular starts right now, Carson Seymour, has a 4.42 ERA. He's like, you know, that's serviceable, but not great. And I think also in the context of him being a college pitcher from last year's draft, it is disappointing. But hopefully, like you were saying before, Thomas, the draft and everything kind of injects pitching and hitters with some life. Although hitters, really, I mean, I don't really know what you can do. Really, the only the elitist of the elite hitters thrive in Brooklyn. I mean, I'm pretty sure Conforto was pretty solid and Pete Alonso was, but other than them, I can't really think of a hitter who lit up in Brooklyn.
But I mean, even the guys who are there now, it's like how many prospects are we talking about there? That's what I mean. Like, because even if you're not the best even actual prospects would be better than the guys who are there right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad saying it, but it's just a cast full of nobodies. you know, it's... Here we go. Pete Alonso, 2016, 30 games for Brooklyn, hit 321, 382, 587, with a whopping five homers. Five homers in MCU / Mamamadi's Park is... That's something. All right. Next up are St. Lucie Mets, and they are playing the Palm Beach Cardinals. And believe it or not, they're actually struggling. They've dropped all four games that they've played against Palm Beach so far, and they actually have a five-game losing streak going back to the series before that against the Tampa Tarpons that, you know, hopefully will be snapped by the time the show goes live on Monday. But, you know... Just like the Sally Florida State League, they also flipped the calendar into the second half. So St. Lucie is in last. And I can't remember the last time I said that. I guess it was in like April. Or possibly maybe never. They might have never actually been in last place in the first half. I don't really know. But they were the first half champion, so they have a playoff berth guaranteed come September.
So they're just mailing it in, obviously.
Yeah, I mean... Last place is a bad look, guys, though, so come on. Basically, majority of the bats have cooled off all at once. Alex Ramirez is 3 for 16, and they're all singles. But he did steal three bases, and he did, you know, draw three walks, so that's good at least. But Stanley Consuegra is 1 for 10. Carlos Dominguez is 2 for 14. Junior Tillian is 2 for 16. William Lugo is 2 for 9. Not really great. Omar De Los Santos is the only one who's really put up solid numbers. And most of these are actually from just one game, but he's 6 for 12 with a double, triple, homer, and three stolen bases. So he can't hold the fort down all by himself.
No. He's fun, though. They have a lot of fun players. St. Lucie, it's the opposite of Brooklyn almost. Where like half their lineup, I don't know if they're going to be good, but they're fun.
Yep. I mean, not Dominguez, excuse me. De Los Santos has like 37 stolen bases at this point, which is, it's good to see guys stealing bases. I mean, what was the last Mets player that?
Marte, but like, when's the last time they had one from the system?
Yeah.
I mean, it's also, like, extremely easy to steal bases in the
market. Right, there's that, too. And also, don't forget, the Florida State League has the pick-off rules and all that kind of stuff. Let's see. He has 39 stolen bases.
How many opportunities?
39 in 43 attempts.
Oh, wow.
No, excuse me, 44. I'm stupid and I can't do math. But it's still, yeah, it's a good success ratio.
He had one of my favorite lines in any of my reports this year so far. He went 0 for 3 and he stole four bases. And I was like, now that's the minor leagues, my friends. He walked he walked and got on errors and then like stole second and stole third and then stole second and stole third. And I was like, all right.
Nice. Yeah, that's a fun line. Yeah, the hitters have all kind of been pitching. Dominic Hamill, he had a strong start this week. Gives him two quality starts in a row, which is something for him, given the way his season has progressed. And he has a 309 ERA in June, so maybe starting to turn the corner, hopefully, crossing my fingers. But other than him, the St. Lucie pitching staff has just kind of been The potential is there, but, you know, just you have to also look at other factors other than like, okay, every guy's going to pitch every 5-6 days, whatever it is. You know, these guys are very young, so they're going to be used, you know, in certain ways. And Calvin Ziegler and Joel Diaz are the most obvious ones that are being used very sparingly right now. Jordani Ventura, you know, he's looked good in his couple of starts coming back from Tommy John, but I mean, you can't just throw a guy like right into the fire and expect, you know, 7-inning quality games or anything like that. He's only going like 1 or 2 innings in the start right now. So there's a lot of potential there, but, you know, it's not all unlocked right now, I guess is the best way of putting that. But yeah, they are definitely the anti-Brooklyn. It's a lot of fun, unlike Brooklyn. And then finally, the FCL Mets, and they are 8-6 on the season. So go FCL Mets. So yeah, that is the system for the week. Any other noteworthy things you guys think worth mentioning?
I can't think of anything, honestly.
Yeah, not really.
We're in the middle of the year.
Yeah, this week is one of those kinds of weeks. Like, the teams are just, I mean, basically, aside from Alvarez just really demolishing the baseball, it's just kind of been, But hopefully next week will be a little more interesting. Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken is at ken1191. And Thomas is at sedmetseason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.